Thank you, Mark, for sharing with us. That was really awesome. Well, hi. I'm Jen.
Hi, Jen.
Are there any risk takers out there? Risk takers. What is the riskiest thing that you've ever done? I'm not just talking to the risk takers, I'm talking to anybody.
Move across the country with nowhere to live and no job.
That's awesome.
Bungee jump.
Nice. I still want to do that.
Get married.
That's awesome. Anybody else? Well, one of the riskiest things I've ever done is skydiving. Skydiving is like the most exhilarating thing I could ever really imagine, and it was also one of the scariest things I've ever done. So we just decided to go one day. I actually convinced my dad and my brother to go with me. My dad is like deathly afraid of heights. And we go and we have to spend like 20 minutes signing like a mountain of paperwork about every single possible thing that could happen to us. And we just basically sign our entire lives away that if we die, it's not their fault. Then we had to go into this room and watch this video that gave us all these instructions and all these scary things about what might happen and what the parachute does and what happens if that one fails, there's another one. And then we go into the person who's instructing and they have the parachute there and they're showing you all the parts. Then you go and it's your turn to put one on. So they have to show you how to put on the harness and how to buckle it in and where the ripcord is, where the other ripcord is, what your instructor is going to be saying. We spent like 2 hours preparing for this. And really, like, I think I knew you have to, like, learn how to, like, pull the ripcord, but I didn't think it was going to be, like, 2 hours of, like, all right, I got it, there's the ripcord, all right, let's do this. So then we had to put it on with our instructors. Now, when you skydive for the first time, apparently none of you have skydived, because I think you would have mentioned that. When you go for the first time, you go with somebody on your back. It's called tandem. So before you go, you also have to practice with your instructor. So he shows you your altimeter, which is basically what altitude you're at, and tells you when you hit this certain altitude, you reach here and pull the ripcord. When I say this, that means, you know, lean this way. When I say this, that means lean this way. And then you're going to look at the camera and you're going to do a thumbs up. And then, you know, there's very specific instructions. Most importantly, pull the ripcord for the parachute. So then we got on the plane. I was the first one on. I am so ready for this. We all get in. You can't even stand up in the plane. We, like, sat, like, everyone sort of nestled into each other. Then we got up to the, I think it was, like, 20,000 feet, something like that. Then I watched everyone else jump out of the plane before me because I got on first, so I'm last. So everyone's jumping out. My dad jumped out. My brother jumped out. It is so scary to be watching other people fall to their deaths when I don't even know if I'm going to die. So then it comes time for me. I'm the last one. You know, it comes time for me, and then I hear my instructor say 3, 2, 1, and I did it. I jumped. It was so scary, but then I was flying. Dream come true. I cannot even tell you how exciting it was. I, you know, and I'm doing everything. I was all of a sudden it kicked in. Oh yeah, all the instructions. Okay, altimeter. Okay, yeah, I got this. Oh yeah, thumbs up in the camera. I'm totally doing. Okay, 13, 12. Okay, ripcord time. Okay. I couldn't find the ripcord. After 2 hours of practicing, I could not find that stupid ripcord. I panicked. My instructor pulled the ripcord. So then we're floating, and then he's giving me a lean this way, lean that way, wave at the camera. It was like, I think it was like 15, 20 minutes of just like gliding through the air. It was absolutely gorgeous. We had a perfect landing. And the camera guy like came up to me and was like, hey, so what do you think? What was your favorite part? And I was like, jumping out of the plane. So, anyway, that was my skydiving risky experience. Tonight we're going to talk about Esther. Esther didn't jump out of a plane, but she did risk her life to save all of the Jews. To summarize Esther, if anyone has their Bibles, we could turn there. The beginning of Esther is set when the Jews are still in captivity in Persia. And this is before Ezra returned to Jerusalem, so it's kind of like mid-captivity for them. The king, Xerxes, was married to Vashti. She got him mad. He banished her. She's no longer queen. Then the king says, oh my gosh, I need a queen. So he holds auditions. So the most beautiful women, all the virgins, go and they go through these auditions for being queen. Esther is one of the young Jewish virgins who's living in this town. And her cousin Mordecai happens to be one of the people who's important in the palace. And Esther wins the favor of these people who are doing the auditions. So she gets to be put in the running for the queen. So in order to even get to the point where you get to the king for him to decide, you have to go through a year of beauty treatments. Who knows exactly what this is, except it says 6 months of oil and 6 months of something else. And it just sounds like a lot of beauty treatments. Then, once she went to the king, he loved her. He wanted her to be queen, and that was it. So she became queen. So then we pick up in Esther 4. So I also wanted to mention Mordecai, who's her cousin. He uncovered a plot where the king was going to be killed and turn them in, but no one ever repaid Mordecai for that. It just sort of got lost. So then we pick up in Esther 4. Oh, sorry, I left out a huge, gigantic thing. Our villain, Haman, he got really, really mad at Mordecai. He hated him, and he decided he wanted to kill all the Jews because he hated the Jews. So he convinces the king, Haman is the king's right-hand man, he convinces the king to decree that on this certain day, all of the Jews should be killed. So we pick up in Esther 4. When Mordecai learned all that had been done, he tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the city, wailing loudly and bitterly. But he went only as far as the king's gate, because no one clothed in sackcloth was allowed to enter it. In every province to which the edict and order of the king came, there was a great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing. Many lay in sackcloth and ashes. When Esther's eunuchs and female attendants came and told her about Mordecai, she was in great distress. She sent clothes for him to put on instead of his sackcloth, and he would not accept them. Then Esther summoned Haggith, one of the king's eunuchs assigned to attend her, and ordered him to find out what was troubling Mordecai and why. So Haggith went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text, the edict for their annihilation, which had been published in Susa, and to show Esther and explain it to her. And he told him to instruct her to go into the king's presence to beg for mercy and plead with him for her people. Haggith went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, all the king's officials and all the people of the royal province know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that they be put to death, unless the king extends the golden scepter to them and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was even called to go to the king. When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this? Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai. Go, gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, day or night. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the palace in front of the king's hall. The king was sitting on his royal throne in the hall, facing the entrance. Cue thrilling suspense music. When he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased with her and held out to her the golden scepter that it was in his hand. So Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. Ooh. Talk about risky. Imagine yourself in her shoes. So the story is like plodding along. She's like doing her thing, and then bam. Mordecai says, go risk your life. Oh, man. I think that every time I hear the story of Esther, I think, would I do that? Would I risk my life? Would I go and stand before the king if my nation was in trouble? I think it's kind of natural for us to think, you know, if you hear a story of a hero, like, oh, that guy jumped into a burning building and saved that kid, or I, you know, watch that news story and be like, huh, wow, would I do that? Or, you know, the guy that in 9/11, you know, ran up the building instead of down, and like, man, would I have done that? And I think that's really exactly the question that God wants us to ask when we read the story of Esther, is are we ready for God's plan to suddenly involve my life, risking my life, risking something in my life? So I think there's three key things we can learn from Esther when we ask that question. The first thing is, be patient. If we look at Esther here, her job was to get ready for the king. She was literally soaking in milk and painting her nails and putting on perfume day after day after day with the expectation she was going to go to the king. She spent a year doing this. Then she hadn't even seen the king for a month before Mordecai even approached her with this. This was a really long time. And there's really no way to be ready for the big thing unless she was doing all those little things. So if she had not been doing all these beauty treatments, if she hadn't been doing all of these things to get to this point, she wouldn't have been at that point. So I think that something about patience that I tend to think when I hear the word patience is like, oh, okay, I got this. I'm going to sit there and I'm just going to be patient. So I'm going to sit there. I don't think that's what it means. Patience is actively waiting for God, actively preparing, actively being ready. So for Esther, that meant painting her nails, soaking in milk. And I bet you, she was thinking, man, this sucks. Like, what does my life even mean? Like, why am I sitting here? I mean, it's great, I'm sure. Like, you know, I'm sure she got to eat really great food and stuff. But how meaningless, what purpose does my life even have if I'm just going to sit here and my whole job is to be in the king's harem and who knows when he'll even call for me? I am one of the king's wives. Great. And I think also funny if you think about if Mordecai goes up to her and says, you know, go to the king. I can imagine her being like, oh yeah, that's right. I just had a great conversation with him last night. I am sure that he'll be really open to what I have to say and not kill me. Seems like totally the opposite. I was thinking back to my skydiving experience. I didn't just like sit there and wait for the plane to show up. I didn't just like strap on a harness and like, okay, well, I guess the parachute's going to come out sometime. I'm just going to jump off. I spent a really long time preparing. I wasn't just waiting there. I was getting ready to jump off the plane. I think, too, when we're getting ready, I think it's easy to say, be patient, get ready for God. What is the point of being patient or getting ready for God if we're not willing to do what he asks when he asks us? What's the point of getting ready if we're not ready? So I think the next thing we learn from Esther is to take that risk. I think that's easy. That's easy for me to say. That's easy to say when you're looking at the big book of Esther. But for us, risks don't usually involve like our lives. Usually, we're not asked to go to the king and touch the scepter and do all the risks. For us, can apply to us in a lot of different areas. It can be little risks like applying for med school, or talking to that girl, or making a friend with that person that looks really lonely, or try a new food. Risks involve a lot of things. I think, look at chapter 4, verse 16. It says, she's telling, answering Mordecai, go gather together all the Jews, we're going to fast, then I'll go to the king, even when it's against the law, and if I perish, I perish. Whenever I've kind of read through the story, I've always been like, oh yeah, okay, well, I guess she's accepting her fate, you know, that's cool. But as I was reading and praying through this, I did not even realize what an incredibly strong statement that is. If I perish, I perish. That means she was walking into the king's palace accepting that what might happen is not good. She was going and believing that God had a purpose and a reason for her to go in, and she wasn't guaranteed her life. She was listening to Mordecai and believing that God had this plan for her, that for her people, and she was just going to step forward to that point. And if she died in the process, so be it. When I realized that, that really challenged me in my life. I don't know if when every time I'm coming to something God is asking me to do, I'm able to say, to look at it and say, I'm willing to do it, and it doesn't matter how it ends up for me. I'm willing to answer God, even if it means that it doesn't end up the way I think it will. She's trusting God, not an outcome. If you, again, back to my skydiving example, when I was getting ready to dive, when I'm preparing to go skydiving, I knew the risk I was taking. I knew that I was going to jump off a plane. I know it's like commonly known as one of the riskiest things you can do. But when we're getting ready to take a risk, when we're getting ready for listening for God's voice, we don't know what risk God is going to ask us to take. So, but God does. God knows what he wants us to do and what he's preparing us to do. So, I think, should have the same urgency preparing for what God has us to do that you would if you were knew the risk and you were going to be skydiving. You better bet I was watching those videos and memorizing the whole sequence and getting, you know, tightening the straps and like listening to my instructors. I was doing everything possible. Do I do the same things when I'm preparing for God, for him to ask me to take a step out? I don't always do that. I think when I'm preparing to take a risk, I just kind of assume that God is gonna, first of all, I assume that I'm going to be ready. And I sort of like am sitting there. But secondly, I think that God, when he asks me to take a risk, it'll just be really obvious, it'll be really clear, and I'll be like, oh, ta-da, there it is. I don't think it's always like that. So, what if God asks you to get ready to, if something comes to your mind, what if God asks you to get ready to blank? It might be jumping off a plane. If God asks you to get ready, what should you be doing to prepare? What do you feel like God, what can you be doing to prepare yourself for hearing God's voice? I think one time in my life that I actually took a risk, yeah, one of the few times, I was at work, this is a couple years ago, I was talking with one of my coworkers. I really try really hard to keep my relationships with my coworkers really harmonious, and I like to make sure that I have a good working relationship and that they see me as really a nice person. And we were talking about how time flies and got into a really philosophical conversation about like whether we were really enjoying our lives or whether we were just like too busy to notice. And then all of a sudden she just looks at me and she's like, man, I just wish I knew I had a purpose. It all just seems like it's just all going by. And I looked at her and I was like, whew, that sounds like an opening line. I don't know, because I started feeling my heart race. I knew that if I go down this path, she might ask me questions. She might ask me like, well, why did Jesus die for our sins? Or what do you mean you know your purpose? Or what do you mean, God? That doesn't make sense. And I was like, oh man, I don't know. I was just really scared. And I remember saying a little prayer and then being like, just gonna go for it. So I was like, you know, yeah, that makes sense, but I feel like I know my purpose. I feel like everything that I do, God made me a nurse. And everything that I didn't say God. I said, everything that I do, I know points to that purpose. And I just feel like when I get to the end of my life, I know that I had a purpose. And she goes, wow, how do you know your purpose? And I was like, well, and I told her about my faith. I told her about how God speaks to me. I told her how I found my purpose. I told her what God said. Miraculously, this is at work when, like, you know, nurses, how we always talk about, like, we're super busy. Miraculously, none of my call lights went off. No one needed me. In fact, no one even came to the little corner of the nurse's station while we're having this conversation. It was incredible. The rest of the story is basically, I talked with her for a while. She starts crying, is telling me that this is really stupid. I'm asking all these questions. And I told her absolutely not. She said, I think that God sent you to say this to me. And the rest of our relationship ended up being like having conversations about God and ended up with her believing and coming to faith. And that was one of the most rewarding risks I've ever taken in my life. And I was blessed with a good outcome. But I don't know. And I think that God could have used someone else to speak into her life. But that was a moment when I had to take a risk. And it was really scary. So I think now getting to the, I think I'm about to go, trying to crunch my time here. So when I'm thinking about getting ready for taking a risk for God, the last thing I think we can gather from Esther and from her story is looking for God's perspective. When I was reading through the book of Esther, God is never mentioned once in the entire book of Esther. I think that's extremely interesting, even though when we read through it, it's pretty obvious that God has weaved this plan all the way through. We can assume because of Mordecai and Esther with their faith, with their heritage, we can assume that they did believe in God and that they believed in God's plan. But I think that one way we can look for God's perspective is to expect him to work. Expect him in every moment. Go into work expecting every conversation that you have to have potential. Expect that, you know, when you go into the grocery store, you might bump into somebody that you could, you know, help their day. You know, every moment, approach with an expectation. You might feel like one of several ways. I have sometimes felt this way. You might feel like God doesn't really have a plan, that like he sort of puts you here, it's kind of a big game, he's sort of letting you flounder, kind of see what happens. I don't know, like just like lets you go. And I think Esther may have felt that way too. She might have felt like, what is the point of all this? What's going on? But I think if she continued to believe that way, the Jews would be dead. And so she had to come to a point where she believed what God said. So I would say if you're in that place, then maybe you should try getting to know God better. looking for him, believing what he says. You might feel like you're facing a risk, like you're right in the middle of some decision, like a crossroads, like something God's asking you to do, and you feel like you're not ready. You feel like it's too big, it's too risky, it's too much. I've definitely been there. If Esther had not spent all that time getting ready, she wouldn't have been able to take that risk. I think I would say to anyone who feels like you're not ready, anyone who feels like you're scared that God is asking you to do something and it feels too risky, I would say look at what Esther did. She went to her community. She went and asked people to fast and pray with her. I would encourage you to go to your community, get involved, ask people to pray for you and come along and support you. Community is one of the biggest blessings that God has given to us as his people. You might feel like, I'm ready, so got this, and no risk is coming. Nothing's happening. You're just sort of listening to the crickets. I have two questions, or two scenarios that could possibly be happening. One is you may have made yourself so safe. You may have placed yourself in so many situations that just are safe, that you don't have to take any risk, that you don't have to meet really very many new people. You don't have to, you're just really safe. I would say, is there something that you can change? Is there an opportunity that you can look for? Is there steps you can take to give God the opportunity? Or you might be right in the middle of what God is doing and you just have to wait like Esther did. I think if you look at your life and you feel like, oh my gosh, everyone else around me knows their purpose. These people are just, look, like they got called to this mission work and they just know they're supposed to go there. And look, he knows he's supposed to be a doctor and he's going, he's helping tons of people, but I just don't know. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I've had so many people tell me, Jen, I know you're supposed to be a nurse. That's really awesome. You get to save lives. You get to meet people. You get to help them. But I don't. I don't help people. I just sit at a computer and type. I don't help people. I just talk on the phone all day. I don't help people. I just go and travel around and sit around and eat food. And or I get to, yeah, I have less people that are like, I don't feel like I might have missed God's plan for me, God's purpose, if I don't think I'm in it. I don't think I know. I think that you are right where you're supposed to be. I think you have got to be getting ready. Be patient. Be actively patient. Let God be a part. Look for his perspective. Actively not only be patient for him, but expect him to work. And take the risk when it comes. Are you ready for what God has for you? I think that's it. Thank you.